Hello and welcome to the 13th episode of MasteringPortraitPhotography.com. I'm Paul Wilkinson and you are very welcome to a gorgeous, hot, sunny Saturday. Hello all, it's Saturday, it's beautiful, the sun is shining, I'm about to go photograph a wedding, but I have just enough time to sit and drink my first cup of coffee of the day, though why that's important I don't know, given I've switched over to decaf. Can't believe it, after all of these years of being entirely addicted to caffeine, I have turned it off, and after about, I think, 6 weeks of absolute agony, and then a couple of weeks of feeling okay, I now feel great. Who knew? Who knew that caffeine could have such a rubbish effect? So I've given it up, but I still love the smell and the taste of the stuff. So I'm sitting here on this beautiful Saturday morning, relaxing a little bit, just getting into the zone for going and photographing a wedding down at Le Manoir, one of the world's great, great restaurants and hotels. It's been a heck of a week. It's just been really busy. Commercial shoots in London, down in Brighton. We've been doing portraits and then culminating today in a wedding. The weather has been somewhat chaotic, of course. I got up at 5 in the morning to go into London to photograph a couple of big commercial shoots, and there was frost on the car. It's May and there's frost on the car. Can you believe that? Just awful. 2 days later, I was photographing, or rather I was training a photographer, a brilliant photographer called Dave, who is already a phenomenal photographer. There's not an awful lot he needs to learn except confidence. So we spent the day with that. Unfortunately, we spent the first half of that day in the most torrential rain you can imagine. It belted it down. Everything I had planned in my head, we had to change. Though the good news, of course, is that if you're a portrait photographer, you have to deal with weather. It's just part of your day to day, particularly if you live in the UK. And so actually it was a useful learn as, okay, this is how we're going to approach this part of the shoot. This is how we're going to bypass the weather. This is how we're going to work. And of course it worked out very well. Beautiful images coming off the back of his camera. So I'm very pleased for him. And then 2 days ago, I was up in Yorkshire with the Hearing Dogs photographing some of their guys and some of their dogs. And it was so hot and sunny that I had to step into the shade for fear of burning. Those of you who've seen me know I have reasonably pale skin and it goes pink at the drop of a hat, which reminds me I need to go get the suntan lotion for today's wedding or else I'm going to suffer. So it's been quite a week. The highlight shoot for me was photographing the Champions of Magic. Now, these are a bunch of us, five magicians from all over the world who collectively are called the Champions of Magic. And they range from close hand card work and close hand skills all the way up to the big theatrical set pieces. Phenomenal. Now, I've photographed them for years. I've done their PR photography for quite a long time. But this is the first time I've seen them in an arena setting. And this was a gig that I was looking forward to so much, and it did not let me down. The magicians were incredible. They were lovely people. We spent a couple of hours photographing them as individuals for, again, more PR work. And then I had the privilege of being the photographer inside the arena, photographing both them on stage and the audience reactions. Although even that, as magical as it is not really the highlight. The highlight for me is that Jake, our 16-year-old son, came with me. He was my assistant for the day. And it's a real pleasure when you get to work with your kids. It's not something I do every day. I work with Sarah, my wife, all the time, and I absolutely love that. That's one of the greatest pleasures of this job. And we've managed to get that to work really well. For those of you who ask, I'll do a whole podcast on what it's like working with your partner. But having Jake along was an absolute pleasure. He's great company. He's a lovely lad. And he's now a lot taller than me, which is a little bit weird. And even on a day where essentially all we did was pack, drive, unpack, lug, rig, shoot, unrig, move, pack, shoot, drive. I think I got all of that in, and that's essentially what we did. There was a lovely moment just at the beginning of the gig because the event promoter had found Jake a free complimentary ticket to go and sit in the audience, and he got a prime seat really near the front, right in the middle, so all of the illusions would look their best. And I looked over my shoulder as the gig was about to start, and Jake was chatting to some bloke he'd never met. Was just getting on with life, having a laugh, both of them laughing at something. I've no idea what it was. No phone, no gadgets in sight, just my young adult son having a really nice evening, and there is no way I can describe how proud I was and how happy it made me. Because when you know your kids are going to survive in a social context, there is nothing better. And so an amazing gig. Obviously, we climbed back in the car and I was all excited. I wanted to talk about all the different aspects of what we'd found amazing and what was the best bits. And I had about as long as it took for Jake to say he liked the mind reader. He really liked the mind reader. Alex the mind reader, that was his highlight. And then the next thing I knew... That's all I heard, that and the rumbling of a Land Rover on the M23. So it wasn't the longest conversation on the way home, and I spent most of it, if not all of it, with the thoughts in my head on my own driving. But it was still such a luxury, such a pleasure to have him along. Now, this podcast, I decided to make this about the kit that I would buy if I was starting out again. So, of course, like every photographer, I have a weakness for equipment. I mean, a proper weakness. I just can't, you know, if I could just have that lens or that flash head or that reflector or that studio light or that camera body, of course, that camera body, my photography will be so good. You know that feeling? If I could just buy this, it would make all the difference. And of course, nothing could be farther from the truth. It might make you feel good for a while, but it will not fundamentally change your photography. Now, there are some core elements you do need, and those are what we're going to talk about. But, you know, equipment does not make a photographer. Your eyes, your confidence and your ideas make a photographer. In portraiture, that's really important. It's all about confidence, because you have to get your client to believe in you. You have to get your client to see you and trust you. So in fact, a kit isn't really your friend, because if you spend lots of time fanning around with equipment, that confidence can diminish because you're no longer engaging the client. You're no longer talking to them and keeping them engaged in the shoot. And in fact, it can be a massive distraction. So hence my belief that you don't need very much when you're starting out. So here's my thing. You need good shoes. Whatever else, you need good shoes. Particularly if you're a wedding photographer. Nobody ever tells you this. Good shoes. There is nothing worse than getting to the end of a shoot and you've got wet feet, they're cold, you're uncomfortable. Trust me, you'll really, really benefit from good shoes. Particularly if you are an outdoors kind of person and you like to go on a walk with your client or go photographing woods or bluebells or whatever is your thing, good shoes. Now, I know that's obviously not the answer to everything I'm going to talk about, but trust me, good footwear is right at the heart of being able to survive as a photographer, and nobody tells you. In terms of photographic kit, on a serious note, your camera is not as high as a priority as you might think. So I see so many amateurs and so many photographers who are developing their skills. They come to us for training days and they've got an amazing camera and a kit lens. Seriously, a great camera, but a kit lens. And they've got it the wrong way around. And everyone does this. You buy an expensive camera and buy a cheap lens. Do it the other way around. Buy a cheap camera and an expensive lens. If you have a budget, spend most of your budget on your glass. For a number of reasons, not least of which, and the most important of which, is that the glass makes more difference to the photograph than the sensor does. Okay, it's the glass in front of the sensor that will make all the difference. And we've just recorded, I don't know when it'll actually hit the website, we've just recorded a video where for the first half of the shoot, I used Jake's Nikon D5200, which is a consumer camera, but I've bolted onto the front of it a 7200 Nikon f2.8 VR2. Now, the glass, that glass is what, a £1,600 bit of glass on a £300 camera body, just to see what would happen, really. And yes, okay, there are some things that I missed off my Nikon D5, really missed. I missed the speed of operation more than anything else, but it wasn't actually the camera that was at fault. It's that I didn't know it very well. It was the first time I'd picked it up, and it took me too long to change the settings as I work, particularly as I work in manual. So it just slowed me down too much for the kind of shoot I was doing that day. Optically, though, can't tell the difference. I mean, that's not true. Of course you can. If you're really into it and you really look, you can tell the difference. But for a print blown up to about A3, trust me, it's the glass that makes the difference, not the camera body. So spend your money on glass. Now, that's tough in that you don't really know when you're setting out what you're going to love. But there's plenty of secondhand kit around, and there are plenty of camera rentals around. I was looking the other day, and a Fuji, what is it, 55 to 140, which is the 70 to 200 equivalent, was going out for about £20 a day. So for £50, £60, you could have it for a weekend and you could play with it. And you could do that with a couple of lenses. Find the one you really enjoyed, because the key thing about selecting which kit you're going to use, not so much what it is you buy, but which brand, which models, is actually when you pick it up, do you want to take a photograph? Does it excite you? Does it make you want to go and play? Ask any musician, and they will tell you the same. The instrument, while it has to sound good, of course it does, it has to make you want to play it. It has to be something that's in you. It's an enthusiasm. It's a drive. When you pick up the camera, you've got to want to take a picture. And if the camera frustrates you, then in the end, it's not the right camera. If the lens doesn't excite you, then in the end, it's not the right lens. So spend your money on glass. You need a good lens, maybe one or two, maybe a wide angle lens, and maybe a zoom. A longer zoom. I use a 70 to 200 for nearly everything I do because it just works for me optically. It's the right length. It means I'm the right distance from the client. I can zoom in and get a really tight, punchy headshot, and I can pull back nearly far enough for everything I do. Occasionally, I resort to a 50, and I also have a 17 to 35 in my bag, all fast lenses. Those are the three lenses that I carry with me as my money lenses. They're the lenses that make me money. In my bag, I also have a Nikon 105 F2DC, and that's my favourite lens. It's just not particularly versatile. So it's good for a couple of things and a couple of things only, but oh my goodness, is it brilliant at those. I have to buy those secondhand. I don't even think they're made anymore. I've never seen one new. I've only ever bought them secondhand and had it serviced over the years. I've got two of them, and one of them in bits where I dropped it by accident, and I nearly cried. I dropped the camera and the lens. The camera survived, the lens didn't. And I was most upset because I could have replaced the camera the next day, but I knew I was going to struggle to find another 105. So that's what's in my kit bag. Of course, if you're doing weddings, you're going to need duplicates of a lot of kit. And that's another good reason to be careful what you spend your money on. Because if something breaks, you still have to carry on shooting. You can't stop. Obviously, the wedding doesn't stop. Does anyone have a reason why this couple cannot wed? And the photographer puts his hand up, me, because my lens has just broke. You know, that's not a good reason to stop a wedding. So you're going to need spares of kit around you. Of course. So back to the actual point, you need a decent camera, one that makes you smile, but don't necessarily go for the top flight cameras. Apart from anything else, of course, they're designed to be obsolete in 3 years. They're just like iPhones and everything else. Ever since we went digital, cameras have a limited shelf life because they're introducing new sensors, new functions, and they have a limited shutter life too. So, in the end, you're going to want to change your cameras all the time. Your lenses, though, your lenses will stay with you for life. I very rarely buy new lenses. I do it when I need to. I would like the new 70-200 VR3, not because optically it's any different, but because from a size point of view, it's smaller. And it'd be lovely just to bring that size down a little bit, because the Nikon 70-200 VR2 is a bit of a beast. You really do know that I'm carrying it around with me. But nonetheless, it's a fantastic bit of kit. So that would be my advice to you. In terms of other things, once you've got a camera and a lens, you're going to need a computer. Now, when you start out, it doesn't need to be too fast, because that's not your key requirement. Your key requirement is it at least runs everything. It runs Photoshop, it runs Lightroom, or whatever your software equivalents are, that you can get your head around it, that it has enough storage to be able to deal with the day-to-day, and you'll have to remove images after a period of time. Of course, once you go pro, you need backups of everything and archive strategies. And then also you need the fastest computers, because your time very quickly becomes one of your key limitations, how much time you have to finish images. And if you're waiting for 20 minutes for an image to process or load, of course, in the end, that really hurts you financially, not just from a stress point of view, but from a finances point of view. So as you get better, and as you start to look to turning pro, of course, you need the fastest kit that you can lay your hands on. Now, there's an odd paradox, of course, is that most people, as they're learning, have a day job. That day job means they've got funds. Those funds mean they can buy great kit. As soon as you turn pro, you realise that you've got very little funds, certainly when you're starting out, and it's hard to justify kit, yet that's the time you need it. And of course, that's the paradox that all of us face. The fact that when you turn pro, you need pro kit, but at exactly that moment's when you have the least money. Ironic, huh? So you will need some kit. You'll need some computing kit around you. You'll need it to be fast eventually, but when you're starting, you just need it to have accurate colours on the screen, and you need it to be able to do what you need it to do. On that note, you're going to need some kind of colour calibration. I recommend everyone starts out early with colour calibration, because it takes you a while to get your head around it, but it saves you money in the long run, because you no longer have prints that bombed because the colours are off. You no longer have clients coming back to you saying, I don't like the colours on that, because what you see on your screen is exactly what your printer or a trade printer is going to produce for you. So you will need that. And then, of course, shoes. You need shoes. You need really good shoes. Now, as an aside, I was thinking this morning as I put on a jacket, shirt and trousers to go and do a wedding. Now, for those of you who know me, you'll know I'm not naturally smart. All right. That's not my normal kind of thing. I'm a jeans and T-shirts kind of guy. However, the importance of appearance is critical. When I'm shooting a wedding, I look the part. I should look like one of the wedding guests. And we take it to the extreme, which is if we find out it's a black tie wedding, we always wear a black tie. And that's just the way we work. We always have. So that when I'm shooting, I'm carrying a huge amount of kit with me. So it's not like anyone thinks, well, who's that guest over there? But I still dress like the guests. I'm in a posh venue and with people who've spent an awful lot of money on making this look incredible. And they want the best possible day. And the last thing they want is some photographer turning up in a T-shirt with my brand on the shoulder, my brand on my back, tatty old jeans and a pair of trainers. And if you think I'm being apocryphal, to a degree I am, but these are photographers who I've seen working. These are photographers I've heard about from clients of ours. These are photographers I've heard of from the venues we work in, and they are most aggrieved about it. They hate it. Trust me, the venues hate it when a photographer or videographer or any other supplier for that matter turns up for a wedding in jeans, T-shirts and trainers. Don't do it. Invest in great shoes, invest in something that looks smart, invest in your appearance, because that appearance is crucial to your business. Now, I know I'm talking a little bit about business here too, but I've worked so many weddings where people have come up to me during the wedding, towards the end of the wedding, or have written to me afterwards to say they love the way we work and they love the photography. And I'm saying, well, you've no idea. You've no idea at this stage what the photography looks like. It could be awful. I mean, of course it isn't. And of course I'm not leading them to thinking my photography is no good. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that they think the photography is great simply because the way we were, not what I shot. They didn't see what I shot, just the way we were. We're smart, we're professional, we're courteous, et cetera, et cetera. We're punctual, and that's really important too. So your appearance is really, really important. So while we're on the topic of putting your kit together, if you're going to turn pro, your appearance is important. Now, if you're going to do studio photography, so back to kit, if you're going to do studio photography, you will need a light. And like I said, that's it, a light. When I started out, my history was, I always said daylight photography was the best. That's because I didn't own any lights. So I did everything with a camera. And even now today, I'm at my happiest when I have one camera, one lens. Even now, I'm happiest when I have one camera, one lens, one client, and off I go. I don't change the lens. I don't change the camera. I just go for a walk with a client. That is my idea of the perfect gig. Of course, I now have a studio and we have a huge business and we do all of these things. But I'm at my happiest when I've flung the camera into the back of the Land Rover and off I go. Go and meet somebody, I don't know, in a park or on a hillside somewhere, and I'm going to go take some pictures. That's my favourite thing to do. But of course, what I was actually saying when I said, you know, available light is the best was I just couldn't do anything else. And then I got a studio. So I bought a light because that's all of the money I had. I bought one light and one huge softbox. And that was it. And of course, my argument then was, well, one light is best. Of course, one light is best. I now own, I think, 16 lights or something like that, a huge quantity of them, which we've accumulated over the years. And I still say one light is best, as it happens. I think you get a better effect, you get better rendering, you get a more realistic picture if you stick to one light. Now, if you're doing beauty lighting and those kind of things, of course, you're going to need something a little bit more sophisticated, whether it's a triflector to create that kick onto the chin or whether you have separate lights. Some of the studios I've seen have a huge, huge multitude of lights to do this stuff. We still don't. We still have one main key light with a big softbox, two strip lights at the back, and that is it. That's my rig, that my day-to-day rig. I have other kit that I can use for other things. I can create other stuff if I really want to, but the truth of it is I don't really want to. I love working with one light, maybe three lights if I'm either creating a white background or I'm creating a rim light around a dark subject, but that is more or less my setup. So if you're starting out with studio, you can do 90% of what we do here with just one light and a couple of modifiers on it, so you can change the shape of the light, whether it's from a harder light to a softer light, maybe a big reflector. But we've just got painted doors in the studio that we use as great big studio flats, easy to move, very versatile. Don't spend more than you need to, but don't try and do it all as a DIY job. Trust me on that. I'm an industrial designer. That was my first degree. So, of course, when I got into photography, I had very little money to invest. And I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll build it. I'll design it and I'll build it. Well, by the time I've bought bits of metal, bits of silk, bits of reflective coatings, fittings, you name it, I'd spent more money than I could have gone out and bought the flipping thing. So don't do that. Don't get led into it. There's lots of websites that got DIY this and DIY that. Trust me, once you've built it, you'll wish you'd bought it. Just go and buy it. Don't buy expensive. There's a ton of Chinese imports at the moment, and the quality is actually okay. It's not as good as the main brands. Nine times out of 10, though one or two of them have turned out to be pretty phenomenal, actually. But just go buy it. Hop onto any of the websites and get what you don't. Buy it twice is what I'm trying to say. If you buy it once and buy it well, you'll not buy it again, because the worst saving is of all is to try and save money, realize it doesn't do quite what you wanted to do, or the quality isn't there, or it's not as versatile, and then you buy one that you actually did want in the first place. And buy it once, buy it well. Always been our mantra around here. Though it frustrates people when I spend more than I should possibly, but I never spend it again. I get it, I keep it, I look after it. And so there you are. So back to the summary of that. One camera, one lens, one light if you're going to go and do it, an on-camera flash possibly, and you are done. But do test different bits of kit. Some people like an 85 for portraiture. Some people like me like the 70 to 200s. Some people like a 50. I know plenty of people that just work around a 50. And the 50, of course, is the best value lens of all. You can get a Nikon 50mm 1.8 for about £90, and you won't go far wrong with it. Its big brother, the 50mm 1.4, is actually a slower lens to operate. It's focusing, the ultrasound motors on it aren't particularly lively. The optical quality, of course, is exceptional. That's about £300, but it's still pennies compared to the big £1,500 lenses, £1,000 lenses that are out there for us. I can't comment on every range of lenses, of course. So pick your camera, pick your lens, and then learn it and learn it and learn it. Learn to read light, learn to use available light. You don't need reflectors at this stage. You don't need lights, particularly unless you're going into the studio. You just need one lens, one camera, and some imagination. And that brings this to a close. I'm going to go photograph a wedding in the sunshine. I'm going to try not to get burnt. I hope you have an amazing weekend, if it's still the weekend when you're listening to this, with the barbecue lit and the beers open. Until next time, remember, be kind to yourselves. Take care.